Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett on Crime. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, Manny Barling. Manny, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Simon. How are you today?
I'm fine, and as I understand it, you brought along a special guest. Would you care to do the honors?
Yes, I would. Our special guest today is Ashley F. Brooks, my co-writer of four books that people can find on the internet as well as our sites. Ashley is a registered nurse and actress and working on a degree right now in the business side of nursing. So she brings some special knowledge today of all the crazy things going on and the topic we're going to cover, which is medical records. So welcome, Ashley.
Well, thank you. That was a nice introduction. I guess he wants to stay married, Simon. What do you think? Did I write that? I'm sorry.
So, Simon, our earlier conversation was noted. You know, for our listeners to understand where we're going, I just really have to read a quote from a doctor who works for the National Health Services in England, who basically set up a group called the NHS Exposed, which exposes things that go wrong in British medicine, and I think we probably need one for the United States. And she made this statement that's really interesting. She said, "Medical notes are the essence of your life. They are, in essence, your life. They are your life. How many affairs you have, if you have an alcohol problem, if someone does drugs, maybe they've been in rehab, sexual activity, your psychiatric state, whether you've had problems from a dissolution and you feel that you need some type of family counseling. They're all very personal issues. No one can go through life as we know it in this century without those issues. Yet patients have no control over their confidentiality. So today we're going to discuss the confidentiality of private medical records, how those records are basically handled, mishandled, used, abused, stolen, and then used in identity theft far in excess to someone just stealing your Social Security number." So, Ashley, I know you've taken some courses in this area, so why don't you give us your general feelings from being in the medical industry and how, you know, go back a few years and tell us how well medical records were protected when you were a younger nurse.
Well, in the beginning, first of all, I would like to start with the very day you graduate from school. Either whether you're a doctor or a nurse or you are a professional, you actually have to do, you have to stand and with your hand and do the whole Hippocratic Oath, and you swear that you will protect people, and you will guard them, and you will, you know, take care of their health. And part of that protection is taking, making sure that a person's personal life, you treat it like it's your own. It's part of your family. You protect it. You have medical records that are all written. If somebody walks up and I was working emergency room, if somebody would walk up to the ER and I don't care if it was the patient, I would cover those notes. Those notes were sacred. Those notes were like writing a Bible, because that's that person's entire Bible. They got their family history on it. It's got their every single personal thing, Social Security. You've got your, you know, address, birthday. It is an absolute wealth of information that is private and personal to that person. And part of my oath was guaranteeing that you're in my care. I'm going to take care of every aspect of you, which is your chart in your medical record.
But where has it gone wrong?
Well, the problem is this. We've advanced. We're now going into electronic medical records, and 20% of the hospitals currently have them, and 80% are saying they're all going to go electronic over the course of the next 5 years, which means that all the data is being stored on a computer.
Well, Ashley, let me add to that. Many hospitals are requiring doctors who participate at the hospital level to be on medical records, and in many instances, relationships with the governmental entities, Medicare and Medi-Cal and many in different states are probably the greatest example of ones that require you to go to electronic records so they can somehow govern your activities.
Well, it's to govern the activities. It's for billing a lot, too. It's so that billing can bill and trace the activities of the nurse, because a lot of what nurses did prior to this would go unnoticed. You know, you do A, B, C, and D, but now it's basically tracked, and they've got tracking for various things that they're going to be adding to it. But it's allowing you to see, you know, but the person's personal private information is no longer on a piece of paper or chart. It's now available on a computer.
Yeah, so, you know, Simon, you're an expert in computers. You know that means laptops, personal ones, computers at home, computers in the office, computers in the hospital. My own doctor has a laptop he carries from room to room on Wi-Fi so he can connect all of his patients' records, what happens if they're stolen. But let's first talk about the effect. In 2003 study, which is really far behind, and I couldn't find a more current one, Ashley found this one, said there was 275,000 cases of medical information theft in the U.S. Now I imagine it's over a million. And Simon, you sent me a wonderful article from The Observer in London, and it listed some of these issues. So let's talk about what happens, and let's come back and start the journey again. The one you pointed out, which I found interesting, was a 68-year-old man who was refused a place in a care home when the social services found his medical records that he was gay. So I guess you can't have a gay man on an IV in a hospital bed in a care home. I guess the next thing you can do is, what do you think, Ash? You think we should go through intensive care and evict all the gay people? I mean, that's what it sounds like, right, Simon?
Oh, that one horrified me. And when I first read it, I thought, oh, well, you know, it's the Brits. Can't really use this statistic on the program. But it's the same here.
And that, in fact, that is one of the difficulties here, is that when you have a theft of the biggest concern with an electronic medical records of any kind of theft, one of the many, is that, say, a patient has HIV, and that information is then leaked out or given to an employer, well, that person could lose their job.
Would
lose their job. And then the next step is they would lose their insurance.
Yeah.
So the ramifications for one person knowing that information is horrible.
Simon, did you know that California and I think it's 7 or 8 other jurisdictions, maybe more now, I haven't looked in a while, have passed specific laws protecting AIDS patients from this kind of release and making it a felony? So in some instances, releasing those kind of records are a felony. I don't know if you've seen that, but California is very, very intense on the subject of protecting privacy records. You saw that with someone who invaded Michael Jackson medical records. Farrah Fawcett was also had her medical records disclosed. UCLA Medical Center, from what I understand, paid over $1 million in damages in one of those cases.
Yeah, I'm just greatly bothered by the whole idea.
Wow.
You know, I thought that what happened between you and a doctor was somewhat similar between you and a lawyer. Yeah,
well,
there were some protections.
That's right, and it's an honored code.
Well, I think the only protections you have now is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Other than that, I guess there's no privacy, right?
Right.
But let's go on. One of the ones that bothers me is we've had a month or so of conversations about every form of pregnancy, pregnancy with children, pregnancy with women, family planning, have all been in the news in the presidential debates. And one of the ones that bothered me, this happened in England, but I can see this happening among fundamentalist Christians. An uncle found out that his niece had a secret abortion. And that happened because a company he worked for was asked to do a financial audit of the local health authority. So what do you think he did? He told her parents. who are deeply religious. Can you imagine the consequences of a young lady coming home and finding out that her medical records have been violated by her uncle's company and that he has now told her parents his family's secret?
Oh, my gosh, the shame would just be horrible.
Yeah, well,
and in Ireland, she would have been tarred and feathered.
Yeah, she would have.
I mean, this has nothing to do with the you know, health deal or the religion deal, and yes, in another way it does. I mean, that was a very private thing that the young lady did, and you know, the idea that it can be leaked, you know, through the back door. It is a truly, truly horrific idea.
Oh, you know, we've talked throughout our various health shows, and of course the three of us have had a running debate about corporate medicine. And a lot of this started in the early 90s when basically everybody said doctors are making too much money and we need businessmen to run health, it'll run better. Well, the last 20 years has proved that it has not run better under corporate control. Because guess what? Medical records are an asset like gold in the ground and are mined for profits by these major corporations. And a lot of it is not an accident. Even some of this release, because you have to remember that some of these corporations who basically control the medical side of our life in the United States are also ones that benefit by the release of your personal information. And an example is a woman was fired after a GP sent her records to her employer. The notes revealed that she had a history of mental problems. So why would corporate America want to stop the release of this kind of information when they use it within their HRD department? So it benefits them to see it released, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, let's go a step farther. This happened in England, but I can tell you I wouldn't trust Massachusetts General Hospital, for example, which is nothing more than a grant and study wing of Harvard University, because in England, patients with medical conditions have been approached by researchers who had access to the records. How did they get the records? Well, for example, medical histories of everyone living in Oxford are used without their knowledge by Oxford University for research. Names are removed, but patient groups claim individuals are identifiable through post office codes. Wow, that's wonderful. Isn't that great?
Now, are these being done on electronic, also electronic records?
Well, of course they have to be, because when you do these kind of surveys, as you well know, the only way to accumulate that data is through a computer system that assembles all the patient's medical records, their treatment, what drugs are used. And every day an American picks up the newspaper, reads, oh, a survey by or a study by Harvard University or Stanford University says 10% of this and 5% of that.
With no logic backing it, but it's okay. We're not going to go there today.
Without even getting to the fact they're bought and paid for, you know, you may have these done by, oh, Pfizer or Merck or somebody, and here are all these drug results. Well, those people consented to participate in a study. So they had to give all their family backgrounds, histories, everything, to basically the person at the university taking the information. So that means whoever financed the study has availability to it, everybody at the university who works on it, students, other people. So like anything, you know, I forgot who said a secret is something for one person and it's no longer a secret when two people know. Well, you have a university, 30, 40, 50 people could know. Everybody in management at Pfizer, Merck, or any other drug company sponsoring it can know. So let's all ask ourselves, 20, 30, 40 people know these kind of secrets. How long will they stay secret, Simon? What do you think?
Oh, I don't think it can stay secret for very long.
Yeah,
I mean,
about 2 minutes, right?
Right.
But worse than that, the question is, how are they mined for profit and are they sold? And I mentioned to you that I'm about to file a very significant lawsuit over the stolen medical records that we'll discuss in coming weeks when it's a matter of public record. And basically we're dealing, and many other lawyers are dealing with people who have lost computers or had it stolen or employees that steal, and it's become a problem. And I want to point out one other one. This happened in England. A member of Parliament, an MP as we all like to call him back there, was sent medical records of a constituent without her consent. The only way she found out is the MP gave them to her. Maybe he got them to prove a point. It really doesn't explain how it happened. But the simple fact is if a U.S. senator wanted to know your medical records, walked in the hospital, some places might give it to him. And if he's a politically powerful one, more than likely, especially in a smaller state, for instance, where you are in the South, I think he's quite capable of getting that.
Sure. But what really bothers me here is that no one should have access. How did this guy get them?
Well, there's no standards of protection. You saw the comment by the chair of the ethics of the Royal College of General Practitioners in England, where he said, from a position of having been the guardians of confidentiality, medicine has now fallen far behind the highest standards, and routine practice now fails to fulfill the basic principles of data protection. There's been no public debate, and no public, as both citizens and patients, are mostly ignorant of the degree to which your information is passed around. And a nice way of saying is, the average American goes to the doctor, sits down, and openly fills out this health questionnaire, and he doesn't sit there and go, will somebody steal it? How are they protecting? What are their computer systems? Nobody asks their doctor. So a doctor can have no protection. The hospital can have, you know, very poor connections and protections, and that's the biggest problem that I see.
Well, they're trying to have security systems within the system, though, and there are security companies, Manny. We talked about this, how they, which I don't understand how to explain it because I'm not, like you guys, you know, computer savvy to speak on it.
Well, let's address that, and I think Americans should know. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which everybody refers to as the, you know, the basic refinancing of America that's being argued about so much, passed a law to ensure that patient records stayed private. It's called the Breach Notification for Unsecured Protected Health Information. So basically, when you think of your medical records, the official word now is protected health information. So if you see the words PHI anywhere, you understand what they stand for. And they actually passed another law called the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act. Why couldn't they just say Health Security Act? But that's, you know, they wanted the acronym to come out high tech so it all feel really clever. And basically this means firms, businesses, including lawyers, anyone that touches any client services or information, medical records, have to commit to a privacy policy and a security rule. And that's what you're talking about, right, Ashley?
Right, but there's also coding that they're supposed to do along with it, along the line, where they put, like, when you're in the hospital, the data is, a person has to put their ID in, and that, and if they are working on a particular patient, they will be timed and coded as to the appropriateness of their use of that record. And so when somebody goes in and looks at that and they don't feel it's appropriate, they will get warned, and third warning, these people are now getting fired.
Well, that's true where we have a specific policy. But what we're talking about is so few specific policies of that kind are really in effect.
Right. It's just floating around. It gets the medical records get passed from, like you're saying, the doctor to the lab to the lab to the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so how do you protect that? How do you protect that?
Well, you must enforce policies, but what I find interesting is that in trying to enforce a policy, and of course none of us see this in the newspaper, Ashley found most of this by researching, and I can tell you as a lawyer, I knew some of it, but the extent to which I've discovered is really surprising. For example, if data is stolen, the hospital or whoever has this data has to give their patients some kind of notice within 60 days after they discovered the breach. Well, I've never heard anyone tell me who had any kind of ID theft because of the medical records thing. The hospital called me and told me.
Especially since the Human Health Services are showing, like that report that Manny sent to you, Simon, with the FDA report where there's 500 different hospitals throughout the country right now that have stolen data. I don't imagine any of the hundreds of thousands of people on those lists ever got notified. Do you?
No. I've been kind of quiet on this end because I'm immersed in a spreadsheet trying to pick through the data. It's appalling. The number of breaches involving more than 500 patient records is, let me scroll down to the bottom.
This sounds like an internet joke. You got to scroll to the bottom, Simon?
Right. There was 108 of them. And the data only covers 2009, 2010. And each one of those breaches it involved loss of records greater than 500. The biggest one I can spot, it involved almost 1 million records when a hard drive got out in the wild. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, where are people's minds? You know, sure, you know, hard drives contain a lot of information, but if you're the IT guy for a large organization, you know, you don't let one of these out in the wild.
I view this like a piece, like if I owned a diamond tiara, the Queen's diamond tiara, I would make sure that I protect it. And that, 100,000 lives are on that. That's 100,000 lives you're talking about, Simon. Well, a million lives.
Almost.
I mean, that's
a million
diamonds.
Right.
Well, let's talk about it a little differently. The law requires that you put up these protocols, create a security system such as the one Ashley described, where you're logged in and out, a security officer, all sorts of things that you would expect every major corporation has to preserve their data. But on a trickle-down theory, it trickles down to every hospital, clinic, and every doctor, and he has the same obligation to follow that up. I have an instance where those kind of medical records were stolen, used by someone else, and the person who was stolen from hasn't even noticed yet. And so if you don't have some system for detecting breaches of your system, you don't know that your private confidential information is stolen. And I think you'll agree that there isn't a major corporation in the U.S., certainly you were an IT manager for years, basically, how would they allow this to happen? But yet in a smaller medical practice it's happening.
Right, but what bothers me is when I started looking at these stats, I just assumed, most of the causes would be, stupidity, loss. You know, did someone threw the wrong file in the dumpster? But that's not the case. You know, 98% is genuine theft.
Well, right. One was a janitor. Apparently, he's waiting sentencing for April 12th, where and that's current right going on now, where he stole data and kept going back and stealing data off the medical records and giving it to his girlfriend, who was turning it into fraud and selling the Social Security numbers. How does that happen, Simon? I mean, how can you have a medical system that is not standardized and put together so that everybody has security?
Well,
I mean, you know what I'm saying? How can you do that? 20% of the hospitals, now it's going to be 80%.
Right.
A lot of information floating around. It's a holiday for a thief.
I have an acquaintance who is well known in the identity theft world. You know, it's what he does for a living. Well, not stealing identities, but, you know, telling people how to prevent it. Unfortunately, he couldn't be with us this afternoon, but when I spoke to him, he went, yeah, medical records, that's the new big thing. I mean, it's truly scary.
It is scary. I mean, it's increased. In 2008, it was at 3%. And in 2009, it increased to 7%. That's a 112% increase. I have no idea what it is right now. I couldn't find the data on it. Your friend may have the data on that. That would be interesting.
And that's
from fraud, direct results from exposure of health data, direct result of theft.
I'm not sure that they really want to release the stats anymore. There comes a time when the novelty of telling the truth in our government sort of slips away, and I don't think that anyone right now really wants to tell the American public how bad it is.
Especially, Manny, did you know this, Manny, did you know that the criminals actually will take these medical records, and when they commit the fraud, they will use this for 120 days. 81 days is misused for other types of ID theft, but they will use this, mine it continually for 320 days. What a mess it's making of somebody's life.
I agree.
I mean, that's major ID theft.
Oh, I don't know if there's any minor ID theft.
Well, that goes to the major league, I think. I don't think there's any minors,
you know,
either, Manny.
The pass on a story we mentioned you earlier, we got a call from one of our credit card companies this week asking us, because it looked suspicious to them, if we had spent $2.45 someplace in Texas when they knew from our other credit card charges we were not in Texas. So sure enough, someone was sampling the fruits of ID theft, and what they did is they essentially ran our card to see whether it would go through, and of course if it went through, then they would of course have some reason to run something that would cost much more through. So that's how they do it. Is that amazing?
Oh, it's horrifying, and I hate to sound like Wolf Blitzer on CNN, but we
I didn't
give us your best, Wolf.
I didn't know anybody could sound like old Wolfie.
Really?
but we have stats coming in right now. In 2009-2010, the total was over 4 million instances of theft and loss of medical records.
What?
4 million.
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge number.
Right.
It's a mind-boggling number.
Yeah.
And so, and there's two aspects of it that are mind-boggling to me as a lawyer. You can talk about this, but at the same time, one has to stop and talk about the number of criminals in the United States doing it. It seems like we're growing criminals faster than we are rocket scientists.
Well, you know, a criminal could actually go to jail, have this information sent to him in jail, and just have a field day. So you can continue his work in the library. It's really sad.
But, I mean, 4 million. My goodness.
You left me speechless, Simon.
That's a large number.
It's a huge number.
Okay, I'm going to get my statistician working on some other numbers.
Oh, boy.
That would be better
than I thought you would with this.
Right. Oh, that would be
me. Would you? Say hi, Dan.
Nah, it's me.
You know, one of the things that people don't think about when you've stolen medical records is some of you still, let's say you steal a senior's medical records, you have all their Social Security and whatever. What if you have you're doing it because you have an ill member of your family? Then you can take this other elderly person's Social Security, buy a wheelchair, you know, even an electronic wheelchair, all sorts of things like that, that are medical equipment to help that particular relative while someone who truly needs it's being denied it. That's really terrible.
Coming in live.
As opposed to dead again.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to put my wolf hat on. Of those 4 million records that went AWOL, only 75,000 were actually on paper. Everything else was electronic.
I'm not surprised.
That's a scary system.
Actually,
it really is.
I'm surprised if someone could steal the paper ones. Those are, first of all, they're becoming non-existent because one of the main reasons for doing this is to eliminate paper. So considering there's really not a lot of paper you can steal anymore.
Well, you know, people would be on a cart coming in from ER and, you know, your orders were to shove the chart in between the mat on the way up, and the patient may, you know, so that meant whoever was pushing that patient up the elevator to the room had access to it. Or if a patient languished in the hallway with their medical chart waiting to go to the next place, that was exposure right there. I mean, there's all sorts of areas that they would teach us to really be careful of and watch, but you would catch people doing it. You know, going to the OR, sitting around, coming out of OR, laying there, you'll find somebody's chart shoved in between.
Yeah, but
so that's changing, though. That's changed.
Well, I also don't think that, you know, unlike the movies, you really don't see criminals putting on doctors' coats and slinking around the hospital like they know what they're doing to steal records when they can just log on, you know, and steal that. And that's the worst part about this is it's allowed criminals to do all this in the privacy of their own home where it's hard to detect them.
Well, I just find it all very disturbing. And it disturbs me for a couple of reasons. I really like the idea that, you know, if something bad happens, I can go to a hospital and they have access to my records.
Oh, me too. Up to date, yeah. Everything, my last lab test, they have the pharmacy on it. You know, not that I do any drugs, but for people who are on a lot of medicines, it prevents polypharmacy or reduces it or supposed to, and they have allergies are listed. So from a convenience standpoint, Simon, you're absolutely right. It's comforting, isn't it?
Right. But, you know, the scary part is, the records are now out there in the, in quote, cloud.
Oh, yes.
Especially if they do a joint unified system throughout the entire country, which is the plan. And that's the plan, plus they're doing nanotechnology in which they've FDA approved, I think it was 2003, where they approved using it's a grain of sand and it's got a radio transmission on it and it has in it all of the medical records and information of a person and it's injected through a syringe. It takes about 20 minutes. It's going into the arm. They're going to scan it like a barcode. Have you heard of this one, Simon?
No, I haven't, but
I've only heard.
They're actually pushing to get this thing done right now. In fact, it was pushed so hard that there was a bill. It goes back further than that. A bill that went in when was it? 2009, I guess. They tried to pass a bill that would force implantation of ID devices on everybody in the country. Where it was one in Pennsylvania that got banned, then they went to California, Nevada, Dakota, and all of those got banned. But they're trying to take and put this information into a grain of sand, all the ID stuff, and have every single person, and the company's called Verichip, and they're now taken over by VeraTeQ. And so these companies are moving it forward so that they can just run you, like, I guess you could just be run over like a scanner at, like you would at the grocery store.
Well,
and,
it, exactly.
And your information is going to come up.
Now, usually I only see those in bad sci-fi movies.
Well, they're doing it, and it's happening, and their plan is to have it in place by 2020.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
No,
I'm going to put my wolf hat on one more time.
We're going to have to take that hat away from you.
Right. Lost records. And sure, occasionally things do get lost. There's nothing you can do about it. But that actually represents somewhat less than 25% of the record problem. I'm shocked at that.
What, the lost ones are? No, I'm not. I think it's willful misconduct in every case. People lose things, but generally they're stolen by employees who aren't getting paid enough. You see, as corporations have forced, you know, profits down, people are paid less, they have trouble meeting their mortgage, a lot of people in foreclosure, they have children, et cetera, you know, they start to suspend the morality because they have children to feed and other problems. So here they are with all these records available at work, nobody's looking, and they're tempted because they've got families to feed. And when we're talking about losses, we're talking about $10,000 per business victim, and individual losses that average over $1,000 for each person. So if you multiply this out, the theft is incredible. And Simon, you know there are gangs in Eastern Europe behind the former Iron Curtain. Iraq and Iran have been guilty of this in the past, who have tried to attack these computers and take information that would compromise the U.S. as well as their ability to sell these type of information to Russian gangsters and a variety of other groups that specialize in some type of computer theft. So what we have is created somewhat of a new electronic mafia, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. But I have to admit that, you know, before I started poking around in this subject, I had never thought of medical records as being rich fodder for identity theft, but there's several articles out there on the subject, and yeah, it's very rich pickings.
You know, and it's true. In one of the cases I'm involved with, those rich pickings we estimate to be over $50 million over a short period of time. That's a large amount of theft. So, you know, as numbers increase and everything, then the risks increase. So it isn't just a theft. It's a huge theft. You know what I'm saying? So everything has sort of grown in size because of this.
Right. FTC releases survey of identity theft in the U.S. 27.3 million victims in the past 5 years. Billions.
Can you repeat that? Would you repeat that for me? I want to hear it again.
Right.
Did you say 27.3 million people
victims
have had ID theft?
Yep. Billions
losses
for businesses and consumers. And the article goes on to talk about where the theft occurred. And guess what? Good old health records. I mean, they hold a wealth of information, you know, including credit cards, personal information. Oh, you're off and running.
And you're right, Simon. You don't really think of it in terms of, I've just laid my wallet down, and I left it there on that computer that anybody could take, because essentially that's what you've done. You've left your wallet on the computer.
Well, no, really what you've done is something worse. You've gone to someone whose life you've entrusted for your health, as well as all the things that go with it, for which they have made demands on you to get that you give them your most personal data so they're able to supposedly help you with your health, and in return, they're not safeguarding it, and they're causing you to lose everything you have. Now, when you look at it that regard, it's as much a breach of fiduciary as the bank just giving up the information in your checking account.
Well, there's a lot of lawsuits on this thing, aren't there, Manny, out there?
Oh, yeah, tons. There's going to be tons more because these new HIPAA laws are forcing greater requirements on the various entities that handle it. The problem is I just don't see a situation where people understand the nature of their obligations, and I really don't think many companies, including law firms, are really complying with the law and even understanding what they're doing. And that's a problem, too. So what we have is this law that's been passed that most American companies are not paying enough attention to.
Okay. Just for the benefit of our listeners, what is HIPAA?
Okay. You really want me to tell you what HIPAA is? Okay. Let me see if I can get it correctly. It's Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. So it's about your health insurance. By portability, they mean the ability to take and move records. And accountability means that they have to account for your records and are responsible for the records. Why HIPAA? Because someone thought it was a cute acronym. I mean, you know, I don't know what it is with lawyers. When you go to law school, you learn all these various acronyms. For example, you know, the swear word F-U-C-K, in law that stands for forceful, unconsented, carnal knowledge, and are the elements of the crime of rape, which are used for bar exams and everything else. And by the way, that acronym came in the 14th century after Henry VIII, when lawyers created that, and then it became, you know, F-U, which is forceful, unconsented rape you. But there's an obsession among lawyers and government to create these sweet-sounding little, you know, acronyms.
It actually drives me nuts, because there's so many of these different, because you'll see the HIPAA, and then you'll see something else. You'll see the, like, down below, you've got, you know, PHI-PI and HITECH and NAUTECH and NETECH and NOTECH and NINNAN and NACA. I mean,
well,
it's like, you
minute,
know,
man.
You go, who are all these people?
Well, actually, I think what's happened is the law has joined tweeting and the Internet. My PHI is sick of your HIPAA, and I'm following HITECH into, and you know what I mean? And everyone's an acronym.
I had to write about Nanda, Nick, and Knock this week. Okay.
Is that like the rain in Spain? It stays mainly in
I mean, it's why can't, exactly, Manny, I think it should be very simplistic. And then everybody has to cut their simplistic thing down to they all want their own, you know, alphabet soup.
Well, no argument for me, because I'm going to tell you, even as a lawyer, I struggle with these. I mean, I honestly cannot keep up with all of these various name changes. It's just too hard.
So, Manny, what's the principle of this HIPAA, though? I mean, what does that mean? It just means what? That somebody says, I'm not going to do this, then everything's going to be fine?
Well, no. The purpose of HIPAA is to create a law that requires companies to protect their records, to prevent people from stealing it. It creates a level of responsibility, almost like banks have, like the FDIC is. Everybody's insured up to $10,000, or now it's higher than that. I think it's $50,000. And if a bank allows your money to be stolen, they're responsible up to that amount. If the bank fails, the government's up to responsible that amount. So what happens is HIPAA imposes fines. They were hundreds of thousands of dollars, as well as lawsuits by patients, but I think those fines have gone up to over $1 million. So conceivably, the Secretary of Health can impose fines that are anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000, and jail time from 1 to 10 years. So, in essence, this is a federal felony.
Okay, but this is all about, you know, privacy of the medical records. It's not about medical malpractice.
No, it has nothing to do with medical malpractice. But it has everything to do with the privacy of your records. Medical malpractice is a completely separate issue, and that's handled in a different way. But by the way, it could be medical malpractice, although I believe it's just simple negligence and breach of federal law. But before federal law, you could easily sue your doctor if those got out, if you didn't have adequate protection. And a lot of the articles, the one I sent you specifically separates, for example, a story about a lawyer who had his laptop stolen, and one that was white, right, protected, and another lawyer had his laptop stolen, and it had no type of right protection on it. And I'm sure the right protection is a word most Americans know, where that's a security way of protecting your computers. It's a password, in essence. So here we are looking at a situation where if you don't right protect it, and I have a laptop that coincidentally came with, of all things, a fingerprint log on. So you can't log on my laptop, which I never thought much of at the time, unless you use your fingerprint. I thought it was kind of cool, but I didn't really think of what the consequences were, you know, and why they planned it like that. It was designed for people to have confidential information. So, Simon, you've seen your share of those security systems, right?
Oh, yes, I know all about them.
Well, tell us about your experiences in the industry, because you've worked for large corporations that worry about their data, and the larger corporations sincerely do worry, don't they?
Oh, they do. And my very first introduction to security was back in the 1970s. And with good old IBM, I won't say we had a secret location because it was far from secret, but when something broke, we would accompany the engineer down to IBM's warehouse and check the part out before he was allowed to come on the premises.
Wow.
Yeah. In the late 90s, I was in Phoenix and got a call to go install a little box for a very large financial organization, and fingerprinted.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just the computer guy.
Well, and that's how, and that gives our audience an idea of how concerned major corporations are about this information getting out. It's a really serious concern, isn't it?
And Simon, how bad do you think it can get if this goes to a unified system throughout the country?
Oh, I'm just horrified. I'm looking at an article right this moment. Acceleration in the use of electronic medical records may lead to an increase in personal health information theft, according to a new study that shows that there were more than 275,000 cases of medical information theft in the U.S. last year. And I don't know where they got those numbers from.
Oh, they're from the credit card companies primarily.
Especially since you've got those other numbers sitting right in front of you, which is actually more accurate. And that, and I don't see those numbers published anywhere, Simon.
No.
I see the lower number published.
But it's scary. I mean, no one wants to publish accurate numbers. No one wants to fess up. And most Americans, I'm not trying to say that they're, you know, not intelligent, but that they're being bamboozled. Yeah.
And Simon, can somebody come by, if a medical person was using a computer, can somebody come by and now this is, I've been hanging around too much TV, right, where they clone the information? I know that with the nanotechnology, that's one of the big problems. They're worried about cloning.
The word is pairing, and yes, of course it can, right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely.
So someone could. So how would that work?
Oh, I have a couple of little devices that I reviewed. They're kind of cute. Give me access to a computer, a laptop, and one variation is a cell phone. You know, you go off to the bathroom, leave me with access. I'll just plug my little cable in, and guess what? I got all your lovely data.
And that's one of the problems of working in the hospital, because there is constant emergencies going on constantly, or bells going off, or somebody needs an IV or a monitor, or, you know, someone's heart stopped, you know, beating. So that computer is accessible to the cloning and open to, and even though I think there are supposed to be systems that shut them down after a time period, there's still a time period they can gather that information, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And the even scarier part is that the tools that can be used, I'm not saying they are being used, because they're more designed for law enforcement. They're called write blockers. You can't even tell that someone has touched the device. Yeah, there is no trace.
Wow.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't use Wi-Fi in my house because I'm aware that someone could sit in my front of my house with a strong unit and read my Wi-Fi and see what I'm doing, as well as take advantage of any records I might transfer on Wi-Fi. And another one, too, is I really suggest people don't, you know, I see where banks say you can do your deposits and all this other stuff online. I would be very leery of doing that for the same reason. You feel the same way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not paranoid, but I'm careful. What I do on Wi-Fi, very, very careful.
And ID theft can, Manny and I were talking earlier in the week about, I had so many questions, but I started reading these different articles, and there was one of the big problems that's been going on with Social Security, and has been going on for quite a while, is that the death database has been open, and they've been trying to open to the public. So on that open to the public are Social Security numbers. Am I correct, Manny?
That's correct.
So because of that, people were going in and using dead people, dead children, dead, you know, people's Social Security number, and then purchasing them, selling them. So recently someone was telling me a story how someone came in and they got tagged from the electronic medical record with the Social Security number. They had died. This was the person. They died, absolutely confirmed. You know, that's that person. There was a Social Security number. So it turns out it was a stolen Social Security number, and it took years for the man who was alive and living and quite well to clear up the mess that occurred with this person's dead person who has his Social Security number. and people are, parents are discovering it with children, you know, later on that, you know, their kids go to get loans for school and their Social Security is stolen, and, you know, it's a big, big, huge business right now.
Yeah, that happened to my daughter, and I said to the guy, who, and I got the call because I was trying to collect from her, and I said to him, do you realize my daughter is only 17 years old? And there was this long pause on the other side of the phone, because he knew right then and there that it was identity theft and he wasn't going to collect it.
Didn't you tell me there were some one person who stole sold the same Social Security number 100 times, and the guy who was stolen from owed the IRS owed him $1 million on taxes or something?
No, it wasn't like the IRS saw this, and what they did is they called this guy up and wanted to audit him, and he said, what are you auditing for? Simple thing. He said, well, our records show that you were in somewhere around, I think it was $2.5 million the previous year. And he goes, what are you talking about? I just work for such and such, and I got this real simple job. What are you talking about? Well, it turned out that someone had been selling his name to people who were making forged passports. And so every time these people who got all these forged passports and Social Security numbers went to work, they used his Social Security number. So it showed this incredible amount of income to the IRS for one guy.
Oh,
I mean, in America, right?
Right. I mean, a story that comes to mind. I was in Phoenix, and I knew a lady, good friend, and she put her purse on the roof of the car and forgot to take it off the roof of the car when she drove off. Next thing she knew, you know, people were all over for checks that had bounced, and she said, what do you mean? Yeah, I've never even been to your store. And they said, well, we've got proof. So she hiked on down to the store to see the video proof, and this particular woman was definitely white. The person on the video was definitely black. She said, okay, do you believe me now? And they said, yeah, but, you know, it's not our problem. We just reported fraud.
Yeah, and then that person gets stuck with living with that because it makes a mess. Did this make a mess of her life, Simon?
Well, it shouldn't.
Huge mess.
What happened? Do you remember?
It took months to get anything back to normal.
Yeah, it does. Ashley had an odd one. Like, do you remember? Rings a bell, doesn't it?
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
I had received this bill for $3,500 for Bally's, the workout fitness place. And I had been sick that year, so I hadn't even been near Bally's. And somebody had gone in. I hadn't been using the fitness thing, so somebody went in and they used my name, used all my information, and signed up for a new membership. Now,
No. He claimed to be your husband or relative.
It was my son.
Oh, yeah, it was your son, right.
He was only like 52 or something. He was my son.
and he was African-American.
Yeah, he was, you know. And then they would argue with me anytime I would speak to them because they go, well, you obviously have this. This is obviously your son.
No, they
well, then you must have a relative.
No.
Oh, yes, Manny. I had different phone calls. Different phone calls.
Wait a minute. They argued with you for a while until you gave it to me.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. I gave it to Manny, and I said, hon, I can't do this anymore. And then it sort of went away. It took a little while, but I had to go file a police report. Which is, please, anybody has ID theft, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to file a police report immediately. Then I had a detective who was going down to Bally's and doing follow-up and learned that this person was continuing to use the pass at Bally's and is still using the pass at Bally's, even though it was ID theft and they had been notified.
Oh.
They didn't care. They just didn't care.
Yeah, and by the way, I resolved it by contacting a senior vice president in Arizona who, frankly, didn't care for my communication very much, but that's a whole other issue. But the fact remains that even after that, they credited Ashley and our farm went away, but this guy just kept right on marching along because I suspect that he knew somebody there, and they just didn't care, and they allowed him to go through and ignored it. And there is an element at times that involves employees and this ongoing ID theft. And
well, that's like the guy for April 12th. He was, you know, the janitor and his girlfriend. They couple up. The couples are using this is their living. This is the new Jesse James, you know, and it's hard to marshal these people in.
You really like this April 12th event, don't
I do.
You? It's coincidentally my birthday.
That's why I can't forget the date.
Well,
sort of stuck in my brain
no.
there, Simon.
now, that's a cheat sheet if I've ever seen one, right?
Okay, what really bothers me about these stories is that the authorities and the companies really don't seem to give a rat's ass.
No.
Well, I've been disappointed with it. I was disappointed with the Bally's. I couldn't believe it. It actually did take almost a year for it to finally really completely go away. And even then, they overcharged me for my renewal on my membership by, I think it was $100 a year. And they finally got somebody this year to actually put it back to where it was supposed to be. And that was, this has been ongoing for 5 years now?
Oh, at least.
I mean, they refused to reimburse me the money that they overcharged me for, but that's, you know, I just want it gone. And I think that's also what happens with ID theft, where I'm concluding that people just want it gone. So it's really a pain in the tail, and it's offensive because people talk to you like you're lying. People at Bally's, they talk to me like I was lying and I must be a dishonest person, and it's a very offensive psychological problem, and I can't imagine full Social Security being stolen.
It's essentially viewed as a white collar crime. It's something that rarely is mentioned on the mainstream media. Yeah, well, unless you're stealing Barack Obama's identity.
that'd be a little hard to get away with, Simon.
Right.
Light of some of the internet posts about Obama lately, I'm not sure how anyone can respond to that one.
Right. But, you know, the fact is that...
I mean, I can't imagine walking in and going, I'm sorry, I'm Barack Obama. I mean, it's like, come on. It's sort of like the guy at Bally's with me. It's just... You know, I don't have any relatives.
Uh-huh. but I mean, the fact is that it's every bit as violating as any other crime, you know, burglary or something worse. I mean, it hurts you in the pocketbook. It hurts you everywhere. And everyone goes, you're the person that passed bad checks or
right,
whatever.
Exactly right.
And it's, of course, a waste of time. So
yeah.
For people in this society already burdened with no time and two jobs and everything else, to suddenly find yourself, you know, fretting over your credit because of somebody's stolen your identity is insult to injury.
Oh, and to steal dead children's Social Security numbers? Are you kidding me? I just can't, I mean, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine being the parent discovering that. That would just, that's, And I don't know how that can ever be stopped. I don't see how that can be stopped. I see it getting worse, especially after you're doing the real numbers on the electronic medical records, because we have a whole new open avenue for people to steal.
Well, let's go back to my other. This is becoming a mob activity, and in many instances, sources blame the Eastern European and Russian mobs. So are they concerned about you and your child and the fact that you're that they've somehow upset your family? No. They don't care. They just don't care, right?
Oh, they absolutely don't care. But I'm not so sure that the Russian mob is where I would put my put my focus. It's people here. People
what?
Here and now.
Oh, I agree with that too, but I'm saying that there is a focus on some of the foreign mobs, and it's not just Russian, it's Eastern European in general, and yeah, I think there's a huge amount of that going with them, because they're far away where they can't easily be traced, they can't easily be arrested, so you catch them. What are you going to do about them?
Right, and so you go, you're the Russian mobster, but you happen to live in, the Caucasus.
Oh,
right. And we don't want to offend you. We don't want to offend you because you're in this other country, right, Simon?
Right.
You've destroyed hundreds of thousands of lives, but it's okay because we don't want to offend you.
Right.
I mean, it should be a means of, some kind of means of international law where you can actually go after them and bring them in.
Well, I just think we ought to employ SEAL Team 6, personally. Let's not fool around. Let's get the big guys out and let's kill it.
And if SEAL Team 6 isn't around, there's always Steven Seagal.
Exactly.
but he's reached a point where he throws his Social Security card at people now.
But he can throw it in a deadly way.
Yeah, that's true. I like him. Simon, if this were your program, because you know so much about computers, if this were your program in a hospital with medical records, or medical records period, what kind of system do you think, or do you think there is a system that could actually do a better job of protecting people? Because obviously it's not.
You know, this is a question that I have wrestled with, and the answer is a plain I don't know, because, on the one hand, you want to protect privacy, but on the other hand, you have to have access, and I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I love the idea that, if I get run over by a truck, they can haul me off to hospital in, bits and go, oh, it's Simon.
Right, I know.
Yeah, we can stitch him up.
Well, we could go to a sort of like a dog tag system, and people can wear them around their necks.
Well, that's what they're planning on doing with this nanotechnology.
Well, no,
grain of sand. It's the same kind of tag as they're putting in pets, they're going to put in people. And they already have test subjects right now, by the way. They have like 1,000 of them.
Uh-huh,
and they have a whole hospital that they've started, and they've got one down in Australia they started, and they're all running them off of this little nano chip that's been, physically inserted into people.
Well, I know that.
Oh, okay. I get really disturbed when I hear this, because I'm a huge unfan of the Orwellian society.
Oh, we're going to get back into Mr. Orwell. Tell us, what is it that disturbs you about the Orwellian society? And by the way, when Ashley says this, you will notice that Ashley hasn't volunteered for any of these so-called groups.
I never will. I'll be out there with the picket line going, ban that. You cannot make it mandatory. Can they make this mandatory, Manny? How could they have these laws up and these bills up and make it mandatory and none of us knew about it?
Well, a lot's been said about Obama's Obamacare, and we've already seen courts strike that as unconstitutional because it requires people to participate as opposed to giving an option. So with that thought in mind, I think you can apply those same theories right now to this conversation.
Right. But, you know, I want protection, but I don't necessarily want surveillance. And that's where I see the big clash. You know, if I get broke, I want someone to fix me, and of course I want them to have access to all of my medical records, but if I'm not broke, the last thing in the world is people running amok with my medical records. So, you know, Where is the center line?
Well, that's a good question. I'm someone who has to travel with the medical records, especially the thought of being abroad. I once became ill in Canada without my medical records, and I said to Asha, I think I'd rather die at home than check into a hospital that has no clue what's going on with me.
And you almost did.
Yes, I almost fulfilled the prophecy.
You did. You were working on it that night.
Yes, I was. But I should say in all seriousness, this actually was a very, very serious situation. The point is that it does benefit people to have that information, but the cost is becoming too high, and we have to make this a national issue, maybe even put out a reward for the first inventor who comes up with a foolproof system, which I think would resolve the issue in a very short period of time. But what we have is corporate America, who's basically ambivalent, who doesn't know if they really want all these protections or not, the general public who wants them, but aren't really aware of how serious it is and how critical it is to do it now, not 10 years from now. And until Americans stand up and go, wait a minute, I'm getting you-know-what here, and I really can't live with this. I don't see much being done. So, as usual, the squeaky wheel gets the grease in the United States. So, until the American public become a squeaky wheel, I don't see any resolution. Do you?
No. Actually, I'll put the ball in your court. You are a nurse. You've been around the health system. Can you see any kind of solution? I mean, nurses, doctors, administrators need access to the data, but how do you protect it?
It's difficult, especially since you're saying people can walk by and clone it. If people can walk by your computer and just clone it, there really is no way to protect it. I don't see how you can protect that. I know the security systems are there, and I know that they're doing their best to do security, but there's just no standardized thing. And, you know, people can, you know, because people have to use their own ID numbers to actually get into the computer and access to the individual file, that's one way, but still the openness of that computer, you know, making sure the computer gets shut down every time you get done with it is one way of increasing the fact that that's one less person is exposed. But that I'm not sure, Simon. I don't have an answer either. But I do think that I think personally one of the big problems too with standardizing a lot of things in medicine comes from different companies have different patents. So because there's different patents, nobody's joining together because it's sort of like a jobs and what's his face, and they, you know, it's they never got together and they argued over their computer rights, right, Manny? And I think that's the same thing.
Well, yeah, I think that really where you're going with this a little bit differently. We had this experience with a high-tech company I was involved with, and represented about 10 years ago, and there were maybe 9 or 10 different security systems being sold. So what you have is free market competition to be the best. But it was also very confusing because it's, you know, very new material, right? So who can tell who's completely tested and what really works? So the growth came in fits and starts because not everything that was for sale really worked, because most of them were more theoretical, right, Simon? Wasn't there a point where everybody thought they had a great solution to it, but nobody really tested it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, sell it. We'll fix it after people use it.
Yeah.
That's comforting.
Well, it's sort of like the U.S. Our government does that with drugs. Oh, well, we'll just put them out there, and then we'll wait and see if anybody dies. And if they don't, well, we did a good job, right?
Right. That brings to mind a project that I worked on. It was one of those multi-million dollar deals. The rush to get it in the in the wild caused a huge problem. Internally, we called it wife swapping. The big problem involved the fact that every or almost every person of Mexican descent in Southern California seemed to be using the same social insurance number.
So, yeah, I never heard of that one.
Right. So when a loan went south, we would generate a letter saying, you owe us this much money. Well, unfortunately, most of the letters went to the wrong Mr. and Mrs. Gonzalez.
Oh, yes. I've had a lot of experience with that one. We experienced that ID problem when we were treating patients in our clinics in East L.A., but worse, believe it or not, in the Korean community. And at one point, all of my clients in the Korean community had to hire lawyers of Korean descent because they just sort of meld each other together, and it's very hard for you to tell who's Korean, who's not Korean. The name Lee, as you know, is very, very common in the Korean community. So everybody suddenly became Lee, and nobody knew which Lee you were suing or whether you got the right one, and it really became a nightmare.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly make collection easy.
He's not here.
It made for a huge problem on the project I was working with, and I don't mind telling you, it was Bank of America.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
We have a nickname for them in California, but I don't think I should share it with the general public, but there's a lot of words
Would it be Bank of Effing Asses?
Yes, it would. No, it's just ass with the, you know, the another word is ended. And by the way, I learned that expression probably in my late teens, early 20s. So Californians have never had a great love for Bank of America, despite the fact that its founder probably did more to save California the Depression than anyone else. The problem is he died, and with him went his benevolent philosophies.
Right.
You know, and benevolence is not a word that's usually in the same sentence with Bank of America.
No. Actually, the bank I worked for was Security Pacific Bank, mm-hmm. but they got gobbled up by Boffa.
Right.
And, they boffed everyone.
Yes, I was. I actually had quite a bit of litigation as a young lawyer with both of them. And when they consolidated, it just became a nightmare. There was a time when Bank of America, notoriously in the 70s liked to make loans to doctors on projects, and most of them, they were in bed with the developers. And so what would happen is when it turned out that they were fraud and there was no such, whatever it was available, in some cases they were ski resort materials. I mean, a lot of different things. So make a long story short, all the doctors started suing them for fraud because all of the developers were their sort of, say, live-in buddies. And they took a terrible hit. So for about 5 years, anyone who represented doctors were suing Bank of America. And that gives you an idea what their history is like.
I love it.
There's
a reason I enjoy talking to you, and it's because I never know where the conversation is going to lead.
Wasn't that on our list?
That was on the list.
And by the way, I'm looking at the TV in the distance, and you'll never guess what's on. It's a Sugar Is Sugar commercial.
Oh, our favorite corn refinery company. I love that.
They're still doing that?
GMO.
Wow, I thought they gave that up.
No, they're still going strong.
So have you written to your lady friend Andrea lately and asked her about how sugar is doing?
No, I haven't. I decided I'd, let her get sugar out of her system before, going back.
You know, for our listeners, actually, I've written a number of articles on the perils of high fructose corn syrup and their claim that it's really sugar, when we all know it's not. It's a chemical derivative of corn, and any resemblances of any product that's made in a vat and stirred like crystal meth and compared to sugar shouldn't be really sold to the American public as sugar.
Especially since it's genetically modified, made with bacteria and viruses. But
yeah,
that's a different show.
But what it does do, it gets back to if you have to deal with the dishonesty in a corporate America on that topic, what are they doing to your private records? I mean, if they care so little about your well-being, they'll poison you with food. What will they do about your privacy? As I said, right now, medical records are as good as gold and silver in the dirt, and they're easier to pant than gold and silver. And that's not only for criminals of this world, for corporations who sell your data, who mine your computer with all these little bots and other little things, and tracking devices are called cookies, that provide to them all your shopping habits. I bought something from Sears recently. Every day I'm getting emails that say, oh, you bought this, why don't you buy that? And in the course of buying, I looked at a variety of different products. So now I get emails every day from Sears saying, well, you were looking for this on the Internet, and we sell that. I mean, and I use Norton Utilities, frankly, Simon, and even Norton Utilities cannot get those cookies off fast enough, and they still get a fair amount of data within the period of time that they're on your computer. And so corporate America just sees all their personal lives as just another way to dig up more ways to make money.
I think one of the best things that some of those credit card companies did, though, in these major stores is the fact that we are not permitted to put our whole somebody wants your whole Social Security number, go the other direction because you're not supposed to give out your whole number.
But, what happens is all these things that are suggesting get rid of the amateur criminals and the ones that haven't gone to crime school for a few years, but you get some of these guys who go to prison and there are other guys who do ID theft there. By the time they come out of prison, anything they didn't know, they now know, and they're pros, and all these things don't work. So we're going to come back to this subject in a couple of weeks after I filed another privacy lawsuit and discuss some specific areas of privacy problems. And we're reaching the end of the show, Simon. So, Ashley, do you have any final comments about how people can protect their medical records?
I really don't. I don't, Manny.
I only have one, and I really think that patients should really ask their doctor for a statement on how their medical records are protected. And if the doctor says, well, we don't have a statement and we don't have a system, then they should say to the doctor, you know, I'm worried about my records, and if you don't have a really safe way of protecting my personal records, maybe I need to see a new doctor. And even that suggestion might cause some change. I think if every patient went into every doctor's office and asked about their policy, and every office manager and every nurse said, you know, doctor, I've had 5 people that ask about a policy, 4 yesterday or 10 today, I think that will affect change.
That's a great idea, Manny. I like that.
And we need to be vigilant. So, Simon, do you have any last thoughts for us?
Oh, I have something that will just get you both fired up. Infant mortality. Infant mortality is deemed as a child dying before they reach the age of 1. Right? Basically, the world views these stats as, if you're born in a good place, like the U.S., chances are you're going to make your first birthday. Guess what? We now score 24th on the list of 24 in worst infant mortality.
Well, Simon, we should make that a subject of a show in the very near future, and we will. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to say goodbye for a beautiful Sunday afternoon. I got an email from our friend Sam Moffey, who's been on the show before in Ohio, bragging it was 80 degrees in Ohio. And so I understand the country's finally experiencing some better weather, except for Arizona that got our rainstorm. So everybody have a beautiful, beautiful Sunday, and I hope they're not too hungover from St. Paddy's Day. So, Simon, why don't you check us out?
Well, Manny and Ashley, I want to thank you both for taking part. It's been an interesting program.
Thank you, Simon. And also, listeners, come join our site at www.howtoeliminatepain.com.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. Thanks, Simon. Thank you, Manny.
We will talk again soon. Until next time, goodbye.